maar dat nog altijd gebruikt wordt om muziekinstrumenten in hokjes te delen. Dat is eigenlijk een beetje een oude taxonomie, want er staan nog altijd geen betere. En ik was die nu aan het vertalen in het Nederlands.
Van Engels?
Vanuit het Engels.
Zou je het vervelend vinden als we in het Engels spreken? Want we werken met een internationale groep. En het is niet erg om te switchen en als er iets niet werkt.
Oké.
Maar dat helpt om...
Oké. It's about an international classification system from the end of the 19th century, invented by established by German scientists. And it's a sort of an international language for instruments of all kinds. They can be divided in the same way, and each instrument can have a number, and then everybody knows what kind of instrument it is.
And what kind of context was this developed?
It was developed in the context of putting everything into classifications. They started with plants, the biology, and musical instruments was one of the things which were classified in the same manner, although it didn't really work, because one instrument can be put under different numbers because it can be a combination of different instruments. If you think about a tambourine, there you have a membranophone, but you also have idiophones, the little shells which wrinkle, which have nothing to do with the membranophone thing, but we have to divide it to put it somewhere, so we put it in a membranophone because that's the dominant instrument. But it is a thing full of inconsistencies and problems, but we still use it because it is an easy way to divide instruments. It's idiophones, membranophones, chordophones, hydrophones. So idiophones which sound by themselves, membranophones which have a membrane, chordophones, the strings are vibrating, and then aerophones, the air is vibrating. So that's the main big division, and then we subdivide. So it's the Dewey system, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, etc. Sometimes we go quite far, so you have gongs with divided surface sounding different pitches, and then we try to explain what it is, and I'm translating it now in Dutch. It has been translated in German, and it is being translated right now in French, but we do it for an international project which is called MIMO. I'll show it to you. And MIMO is a consortium of partners from all over Europe, actually from all over the world now. With the aim of assembling online. The catalogs of all these museums separately and put them into one portal, so you can search right now in more than 50,000 different instruments from all different kind of museums.
So that means that the information that's in Museum Plus will go into this collection?
Yes, yeah.
Is already,
but only on the level of musical instruments, because this is a musical instruments museum online. Yes. Nothing to do with the other.
No, I understand. Yeah. And also we asked the same question, and actually we...
I think they are involved in some European... This has been started as a European project, and I think in the Saint-Corner they have been involved in European projects as such as well. I think they have... they definitely have parts of their collection in Europeana. Yeah. This is also in Europeana. But it's in between. And now it starts living its own life, because we are not European anymore, limited to Europe. But we have also, for instance, Musée Pan-Africain de la Musique en Brazzaville. We did a campaign there in 2014. And we did the same in Ouagadougou, in Burkina Faso. And I got a prolongation of the project, and now I'm negotiating to digitize a collection in Ethiopia. But that is very important, very difficult to have access to them. They are very quite protective towards their collection. the people from Brazzaville and from Ouagadougou were really very enthusiastic to have their stuff online. And so this is the result that people can now from everywhere see the collection of Brazzaville and Ouagadougou, which otherwise would have been high up there. They exist, but nobody actually goes there.
So can you say something about the why it's important to extend the European project with African partners?
Because it concerns collections which are not accessible or mainstream accessible for European or people outside Africa. Who goes to Ouagadougou and visit the Museum of Musical Instruments in Ouagadougou? You see, and it's for researchers very interesting for ethnomusicologists to be able to compare instruments from different collections, also from Western collections. But the big importance of the African collections is that the local agents of the museums provide the local name, and sometimes also the local builder, which is never ever the case in Western collections because we don't have a clue, and we have long been taught that it was not interesting at all to have.
Can you say something about that?
Well, as you hear, I'll say.
It's
a political thing in a way, of course. It has been during centuries, cultural objects, so musical instruments, have been taken away from Congo and from Africa, and they have been put into Western collections. But the name of the instrument was not important because it was unexplicable, unpronounceable, and the man who made it was even less important. It was just a decorative, a beautiful and aesthetic thing in the best case, or mostly it was just an exotic thing from, this is strange, it's completely different than our violent or whatever. And then later on, there were museums founded in Africa, but always by Western people. And the museums were meant for Western visitors. So still it was a Western thing. And then nobody ever thought about exposing African heritage for African visitors. It was museums were a Western thing. But then during the independence movement in the 60s, Africans started to use their heritage as a way to anchoring their own identity, and in that way heritage became very important, and also the people who made it, the population where it was made, the local name in the local language was very important, and even they still reproach us now. Everybody's talking about restitution, we have to give back them the objects, and the people I'm working with, it's only the people of two museums, they say we are less interested in having our objects back because we are sure they wouldn't exist anymore. They are quite they are realistic about that as well, but they say what we want is that the information which is given about our objects outside Africa, that at least that information is correct and complete.
So would you say that digital archiving is a way that this, let's say, naming restoration can happen.
Yes, well, one of the important things of this digitization project is also that we hope that it will heighten the quality of the metadata in our collections in the West. Yeah, just to value their collection, to give the right value to their objects. You know what that is?
I will ask a bit more concretely, like for example the name, like do you see the information that is now in a compatible system but with a different perspective? So the fact that you might describe the same object in a different way, for example, or the maker is there and not there in a Parisian museum. Do you see this information permeate Bijvoorbeeld, hebben jullie als museum namen veranderd of aangepast?
No, not for these things. No. No. No.
Would that be imaginable?
Yes, of course. Well, we have been adapting names. We have been changing names to exactly to be compatible, so that different databases can be compatible. Yes, we have made a common thesaurus, a common vocabulary. So, what one museum calls a bridge harp, another museum calls a kora. I'm talking about African instruments again. And a bridge harp, the kora is a sort of bridge harp. So, if we can identify the instrument as being not just a bridge harp, but actually a kora from West Africa, then we have put the name kora also on the other database. But that has been done during the project when we were all working together, and we sort of made a common, I can't say it in a different way, a common vocabulary, a thesaurus, through which it is easy to use the same name, because it's sort of a drop down list, and you always use the same way of spelling, of writing it, so there are no mistakes anymore on that level. Of course, we do have synonyms and recurrent and rejected terms, but these are hidden in the thesaurus. But if you look on a wrong name, you'll find the instrument anyway. Ideally, it's a work in eternal progress. But what was I going to say? I forgot now. Yeah, there's a
renaming
a common thesaurus. Yeah, I forgot now. Yeah, but these things have these African instruments were not yet in the thesaurus. We didn't have these are like for now rather unique instruments. So it's their authority. These are the authoritative terms. They will be the terms which will be used for other instruments as well. Not always, for instance, and that is the thing with African instruments. It is in this case. Is it from a particular? I don't know by heart who is the, of course not, who is the population. But for instance, this same kind of instrument, it's a lamellophone, it's a sansa, from a neighboring population will have a different name. And then we use a different name, because why would we use one, why would we be in favor of one particular population? But that is very difficult, because when you see, for instance, these books, this is a sort of the reference for musical instruments, the Grove. It's a book of 84. It is digitized in the meantime. But here you say, for instance, I think A to F, J to O, I'm quite sure they will have something like Itzanzi or something like that, but this will definitely or probably be from another population. And they sometimes uniform, so they sometimes say, okay, this is the name of one particular instrument of one particular population, but they are using it for different populations, which is in a way isn't very scientifically correct or doing honor to the people who actually made it. Kisange, for instance, is a very similar, because this is also another one. But it is something with many, which in its many linguistic variant forms denotes a number of types of lamellophones. But the good thing about computers and digitization is that you don't have to limit yourself to one specific term. You can use as much as you want to.
This is very nice, huh? That and
it is.
And it's also that's exciting to think that those types of de-doublings can happen.
Yeah, of course. You don't have to choose one to name many. You can name them all separately with their correct name. And people there, of course, that's what they want to. But their instrument is named in the right way, which is normal. We don't want our violin to be called
whatever
in the Mossi language.
It's whatever.
Yeah,
that's the problem. So maybe we can come back to the file you were translating. And you said...
Yeah, this is part of the... So each instrument, I don't know... it's in another site. But each instrument, I have to go to another... which is the back office of the database. Each instrument is determined through not only its name, I have to look in. But also, it is also determined by classification. You just have one example. I'll take an easy example. For instance, this is the thesaurus for the public. So you see a very straightforward subdivision.
I'm gonna try to tilt it. Does it tilt?
Oh, no. Ah, I don't mind.
You're getting it. Okay.
You have keyboards, you have percussion instruments, you have stringed instruments, you have wind instruments. These are the categories which the public recognizes immediately. Now, for instance, within the stringed instruments, you have subdivisions, citherns, which are citherns, double basses, fiddles, for instance, the fiddles, and there you have all kind of... Yeah. It's a very extended thesaurus of musical instruments. I think it's the biggest now. Because by now, we started with 10 partners, and I think we now are about 15, but we're like 5 waiting also. It's a very good sustainability project, because the project ended, the financing from Europe ended in 2011, and we are still coming together each year and integrating new partners. So we have Poland now and Barcelona, we have Ouagadougou and Brazzaville, the first American museum is waiting for a million. What else? Oh yeah, Russia wants to be part.
And waiting, that means that they wait for funding, or they wait
for...
Yeah,
they were for, and also mainly for technical, the integration on a technical level. It's Paris who is centralizing that part of the job. I'm doing the thesaurus and the classification, and Paris is doing the technical part, which is the heaviest part. And the person who is doing that is, he has a lot of work, so
There's a backlog,
exactly. For instance, Zizi maybe is a nice one, or the Rutka. The Rutka is an. It was thought that fiddles have never been really associated with Africa. If people think about Africa and music, they think about drums and djembes and maybe balafons, but not so much about fiddles. And we actually found out that there are no less than 36 different genres of fiddles. So it's quite amazing, and they're really beautiful. And this is.
And you find this out because you're now working with your partners on this as well.
Yes, and also because we are working on. We have had a project on fiddles. It's finished in August. Ethnic fiddles which are present in online catalogs, and we had about 2,000 different records, which we could subdivide into 36 different kind of fiddles. So this was quite very interesting. And each instrument with the picture was given different tags. So different, I can show you, but you've probably seen Exit. You've probably seen Museum Plus. I think
we discover new things every time. So
Museum Plus. So. I'll take the same instrument, I'll take the Rutka, just to show you.
I'm just going to turn it again.
Yeah,
it's really
feel free.
With the sun, but you can still see.
Do you want me to lower the...
Oh.
You can push,
yes.
If you push the...
I was looking, but I couldn't.
The button with the downward flash.
That'll make
No, you have to keep on pushing, sorry.
It's not... While the Museum Plus is loading, we have time.
Yeah, voila.
This is very interesting to see.
Ik moet blijven duwen zo'n beetje naar onder in het midden, maar het is een beetje,
het
is een beetje grillig.
Schattig, bij iedereen komt dit bericht op.
Ah ja, waarschijnlijk. Hè. Het is een gemeenschappelijk CMS-systeem. Ja. Een beetje zijn tijd nodig. Dat is trouwens een Afrikaanse doedelzak.
Ah.
Ja, dat is eigenlijk heel, heel uitzonderlijk. Dat totally deteriorated. Shame. It's from the Berbers, from the Berber population in Morocco. But I wanted to show you the Roodka. I should rather take the collection. And then these are all ours. And then, for instance, I'll take Ayaka Fando Emil. We have been during the process of digitizing in Ouagadougou. We have visited several builders and music makers, and we have bought this one. We have bought this one on the spot when we were there in 2013, but it has been taken with to Brazzaville when we went for the second campaign in Brazzaville by Jean-Paul Goudougou, who was the main agent in Ouaga. Because in every campaign we see each other, everybody's working together, not only with the local people but also with the other partners, which is quite nice. And then, for instance, here you see this is a simple Roodka. Roodka is a fiddle from it is named the Roodka by the Mossi in Burkina. It's named Duruga by the Bissa people in Ouagadougou, who just live next to it, but we still give a different name. And then, for instance, what was I going to show you? Here you see
how these different names
These are all the people who were involved. This is the man who did the production, who was the facteur and who made it. This Jean-Paul Goudougou was the one who collected it in Ouagadougou and brought it to Brazzaville. And Caroline, who is one of my collaborators, she used to be, it was on a project, so it was a temporary contract. And she actually collected it from Jean-Paul Goudougou and brought it to the museum. This is quite a simple origin. I think we have the dates as well for the date of production, the date of acquisition, when it arrived in the museum, when it was given by Goudougou to Caroline, and when it was given by Emile to Goudougou. So you can reconstruct the whole thing, which is really interesting. This is where the classification is
and
given.
And so just to, because you only do this for... this is happening for acquisitions that happen from now on?
I've done it for everything.
What is the first... instruments.
The oldest instrument.
Well, no, more the history of the instruments entering into the collection.
Well, in 1877, when the museum was opened, when the museum was founded, two main collections entered the museum. There was a collection of François Joseph Fétis, who was one of the first or the first Belgian musical graphic. Because musicologists didn't exist yet. And another collection came from an Indian musicologist, Tagore, and these two collections were brought together, 200 pieces, and voila, I can show you one of the oldest.
That was just a question, but just to understand how much of the that information that is been recorded on index cards or whatever, you actually managed to take into the system, because this is quite precise.
I want it to be like that. I'll show you one example. This is the oldest, one of the eldest oots, and oot is an Arab lute, and it's one of maybe even the eldest oot which is still preserved in Europe. And we know that because you see here, for instance, the collection, the origin is much longer. It has been the population is Arab. We don't know more about it. The person who has collected it in, then you can look at the geographical references in Alexandria was Etienne Zizinha. I know he was the ambassador of Alexandria. François Joseph Fétis is the musicologist who asked him to collect instruments, and then it was when he died, it went to his sons, who sold it to the Belgian state. And then I forgot that it had been exposed in 1933, this instrument in, and if I want to know more about that, then I have to go to the emplacement actuel, which gives the history of the instrument since it became a museum object.
Fantastic.
So in 33 it had been, that's the first thing we know, it had been uncleaned, mm-hmm. borrowed to Voilà, Archeleur, Provence. Yeah, this is my reference in the archive. So there is an exhibition in Brussels, but then in 1999 it went to the Wolstraat. In 2000 it came here. In 2010 it was exhibited. In 2010, the EP was found and I put it there. And then and this is the Ricolement, so I have to check every 5 years. We try to check everything as well. So this is the history of the object in the museum.
Mm-mm.
And then what else? Yeah.
So here is my question.
Yes.
Like, we came to this instrument because we were interested in how in the Museum Plus there is place for different namings of the same instrument.
What
does that look like?
Well, here I have, but this is a simple one. Oud. It is named. It should be changed here before it was called UD Oud. But I find now in English sources that we talk about Oud OU. So I asked Eva Koudezer from she manages the Thesaurus to change Oud written like this in Oud. But I don't know why this should have been changed in Oud. I don't know. I need to check. So it is like this in the Grove, and then in another catalog, it's in the oldest, in the 1880 catalog of Maillon, it is written like that. In an exhibition catalog, it's written like that. So I try to.
That's really interesting.
And
how do you? Because I was interested in
the design.
Well, looking at the public side of this database, I realized that in the
Parmentis?
Yes, that only for the musical instruments, for example, the place names have been are mentioned with their colonial name and their current
historical name. I don't remember. I try to give them as much as possible in the Museum Plus.
Yes,
there will be. And I'm working with Eva on a historical thesaurus. I know Eva is working quite hard on it. So we have the current name, for instance, Ethiopia, and then the historical name is Abyssinia. And we have many instruments which have been sold from Abyssinia because they have been sold before the 60s, bought before the 60s. That is an easy one. I'll show you another one because this is. It doesn't show, so you have to open and then you see. But for instance, geography, it becomes difficult when you have things like Austria-Hungary and you don't know actually where it comes from the Austrian or the Hungarian part, and then it is really like a historical term. But I don't think we publish it yet. No, we don't publish it. We are not able to publish it yet. It would be great if we could, but.
It was interesting for me to see, as our interest is in how can these systems somehow make space for, well, the trouble of
acquisition and the trouble of acquisition. Oh, yeah.
Or trouble of classifying or of placing or of thinking about where does it belong and who has the right to give it a name, all these kind of things. And so, actually, in Parmentis, this was the only moment that I thought, hey, here is a trace of this by actually mentioning the two
the origin and the of the object in the museum, for instance.
Well, to mention the two ways of naming the location, suddenly shows that this is not static. It's not like information that is always staying the same.
It changes the whole time. It has to change because that means that you keep on looking for right information. It should be. It's a dynamic database. It has to be a dynamic database.
So how do you feel? Like it seems like you are using the fields on
Museum Plus
already to somehow track this. Dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. I can give, for instance, Ibrahim. This is the interesting thing about all this about digitization. You can really put in everything you want to. I mean, look here, for instance, is this... Ah, yeah, this is another example of... okay, it's a good one. All sources which give different names of the same incident. That is interesting, but I don't think... I don't find it that interesting. It can be very revealing, but what I find very interesting is that, for instance, here, you can trace the whole... all the people who were involved in the acquisition of the instrument. And you see, for instance, he was the one who sold the instrument. He's a poet from a confraternity, and he sold it to Adolphe Courbarien, who was who worked in the juridic department of the embassy, and he gave it to Comte de Noidon, who acted as an intermediaire with Auguste Herpin, which he was the ambassador, and Auguste Herpin was the engineer, the Belgian engineer, who acted as an intermediate between the curator of the museum and the... And voilà. So, and then if you want to know who, what happened when, then you... it's not always very practical, and people are complaining about it, but I think it's for research, it is a very handy. Then you just have to compare, for instance, the acquisition by the people in Alexandria and the man in the lower man in the embassy. That was done in the 29th of September 1779, etc. And then the second, the handing over to the ambassador was some days later, and then the Herpin actually gave it in Belgium to the conservator in that date, voilà. And then you also can have an idea how long it takes for the instrument to come from Alexandria to Brussels. And
I love digital. It's quite interesting to see. Can you say more about what you like about it?
For instance, I think I have it here. I found this in the library, voilà, and it's about these instruments, and it's the original invoice of the instruments. It's not only the Rebaba, there are other instruments as well. I think I have the backside as well. Voila, these are all the instruments. Oh yeah, I think you can, I can change the, but I won't do it now, if you don't mind.
No, these are all
the instruments which have been sold at that point by Mohamed Ibrahim at Courbarien.
So in a way, through your work on the different objects and digitizing them, you're reconstructing this list.
Course, yeah, and this is also helpful because all these instruments can be found back in our collection, and then it helps also. So I did not only link this document to this instrument, but to all the others as well.
Yes.
And this is the Arab translation of that Muhammad Ibrahim. I don't understand anything about it, but it's nice.
Someone might understand it.
Voila, and it's 1878, 1882. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I had now. I can't do that. Ali, hoe haak je hem terug? These are all the... Hoe haak je hem terug? Ja, of course. What was I going to say?
That's impressive.
1879. This is, not all of the objects. I'm responsible for the African collection. Not all of them can be that well documented, but many of them can, and the more you work on them, the more you find.
Yeah, because of course, slowly the information about one object starts to help the other objects.
Yeah, to identify the others, etc. Yeah.
And so, how about you make your own? Let's say, for example, with the different terms or
the different terms are mainly in the thesaurus.
Yeah,
I give the different sources for this particular record. But in general, it's Eva Koudijzer, who, I think if I click here, hold that to the thesaurus. And I don't know how far she is, but if we take Rebaba, the same name, Rebaba, where was it, there somewhere? I think Rebaba. Yeah, voila, here you have the terms translated. That's what I wanted to say about the thesaurus. The big advantage is also that it not only that it is controlled, but you can link translations to it quite easily. So, and if you want to, I think, I don't know where she's doing it, but you can link synonyms, rejected terms, current terms, preferred terms. I can't do it. I have no access
to it.
Yeah.
And so, just to understand what that like you, my imagination starts to work when you say historical thesaurus. So to somehow give a history of terms. No?
Yeah, it could. Yeah, or the use of terms, the mistakes people make with terms, the current, the common mistakes.
So that's
the history of the word. Could be. Yeah, you could have historical terms as well. Of course. Yeah. For instance, the Santa is an error made by, I think, Livingstone. If you have such an instrument, you could very well indicate that. Sansa is a lamellophone. And the first lamellophones found by Livingstone were along the Zambezi River, and they were called Nsanzi. And Livingstone misread it or misheard it, and it's oral tradition, so it is always pronounced differently. And so he thought he heard Sansa. And it is still in use, Sansa, but it should be Nsanzi, and it shouldn't even be Nsanzi, because Sansa is a word used for all lamellophones, but they all have different names. It's called Ligembe in Congo, it's Kisanzi in the Wakadugu. So that word Nsanzi was wrongly pronounced as Sansa in the West, and then became extrapolated for all the lamellophones, but it's completely wrong.
So this shows clear how such a system like the digital can
all note that and all record all these different changes in name giving.
What kind of code is this? I'm just curious because it looks almost like
this?
A
Well, we invented the code because also OER. It's the code for the place name. We you could give, for instance, you could say, voila, this instrument. It's very the identity of an instrument, of an object, any object, is and its security, or how would I say, its juridical raison d'être, rationale. An instrument is yours when it has an inventory number and a place number, because then within a minute or 5 minutes, if your museum is really good, you can go and have the instrument, whatever the name is or whatever it looks like, but you know where to find it. So this is like the basic registration, very important. Inventory name and place number. And if it doesn't have a place number, it's like a lost thing, because you can never find it back. Definitely not like in the Saint-Quentinair, where they say they have about 600,000 objects. I mean, you have to give them a place.
Emil showed us like a stack of this, like papers that all represented found objects that there was no idea where they belonged. So the opposite can happen also.
Exactly.
That you don't know what things are.
Yes. And so to make things easier, to uniformize things also, because some people write down, in this reserve, in the second cupboard, and in that tiroir with the blues, whatever line on it, or written blah, blah, blah. We have created a system. It's a drop-down, actually. I think you can see it here. And we gave each... Is it to be seen here? Yeah. This is the Saint-Quentinair. This is much more complicated, but our system is rather simple. For each room, we have a combination of letters. This is Old England Guimard. It's the white thing. We have also Old England Reserves, which is the new concrete thing. And then we have, I think, OES Saint-Quentinair.
I like the bureau.
But this is not official. And then next to it, we have that this is my depot. We have a number, and it is a number which is written on the door, which is engraved in the door. So it's also the number of the key. So I thought that was the easiest, the most short thing not to get confused about. And then in each reserve we have different cupboards, and we just gave them a number. And it's a bit big paper, number 1, number 2, 3, 4, 5, it's up to 35. And then A is within the, but it's all with virtual, within the cupboard you have column A, and you have row O1. And so every object can be found back,
mm-hmm.
can be found back easily. This instrument used to be in cupboard 27 when it was still with the Islamic collection, but I gave up the Islamic collection because I should be.
And only realize now that this is the trajectory of the object through the.
Yeah.
Through the, oh, sorry, through the.
So it used to be there, and that wasn't a good idea, and so I changed it. But it used to be in the 26th cupboard in column B, row 03, so it is easy to find it back.
Yeah.
And every instrument has to have that. Before we didn't have that, it's just called Wolstraat. Yeah, I know there was a reserve there. It's from before my time. So I don't know. Wolstraat, I have no idea where it was. But I found papers which said control fiches, which said, voila, this instrument has been checked in the 1st of February 1999, and when it was in the Wolstraat. So I noted it down.
And because this represents a lot of work.
Yeah, I started in 2002.
Really early then.
Yes, but in Museum Plus I started in 2008.
Yes.
Yeah, the system has been installed in the Amarage in 2008. We bought the system in 2008, and then we started filling in the records, making thesauri, etc.
And
I know there are still collections in San Cornet which are not in French. I don't understand.
No, it's clear. So there's different.
That's off the record.
Okay.
but we realize that there's different levels of also of interest
from
in
interest.
What this does. This is in the
exactly, and I'm a bit obsessed, I must say.
I think there's something in.
It's extremely interesting for research.
Yes, I think. I agree. But what was I going to ask? Yes. How did you in 2002? How did you then work? Did you work with spreadsheets?
I started with an Excel file, simple, because there was no inventory. The last inventory which had been made by the African Instruments was in 1922. So I started doing that, going to with the photographer. We took pictures of everything, and I had an Excel sheet. And then because that became so large, and I wanted all these things included. So because at the same time I was looking at, I found older inventories. I even found in a cupboard, in a box which served as the foot of the table I was working on, because it was a card box table. It was really, and I looked in that box, and it was full of old inventory, of old inventory records, even with drawings. It's great. And so I assembled all that, and what was I saying now? And then the Excel didn't meet my needs anymore, so I changed into Access. I had my Access thing, which was quite complicated. And then in 2008, Museum Plus came. And in the beginning, for me, it was awkward because I couldn't find. I had things like. Data concerning the history of the object before it came in the museum, and then all the fields concerning the history of the object after it came in the museum, and then also all information on the production of the. So I couldn't hear. It was donner de base, donner historique. Notes, could be anything, données supplémentaires.
Was quite
happy
generic,
with it.
Yeah,
but I worked a lot with Alice, with people from e-collections, and we really got into something which was more like an expert system, adopted to the needs of what I thought had to be filled in.
Okay, so that's good to know. So, like a long history, you see it. You can really see that there's a but would you say?
But it's not only mine. Many of the people here have all this kind of information, because for that European project I was talking about, MIMO, we all had to inventorize, digitize. I got a lot of money to engage to recruit a photographer who photographed all the instruments. And instead of 7,600 instruments, what we thought we had 9,600.
That's a good. That's a good surprise.
Yeah, and it's all internal.
Can you talk to us maybe a bit about the work of, like, to do this type of work and with your interest in digital inventories? When you work in other countries, like, how does that work? Like, why is that interesting, or how do you?
I explained a bit before why it was interesting. Why
yes.
It is interesting.
No.
Why it is, okay.
More like the work
why
itself.
It's nice.
Yeah.
It's an adventure. I can show you some pictures. Maybe that's the most telling thing to do. My glasses. Is it here? Next to us, this was the museum, and next to us was the caserne of an army, but they didn't have anything to do, so they were really,
bored.
They were really bored, so they came and see every day what we're already doing. Do you have something to eat? No. But these are the people. This was one of the agents of the museum. We had a lot of success. The press came also, but maybe I shouldn't go through them all. Maybe I'd rather show you how we worked. This is the museum. Here is the reserve. When we arrived there, we had asked for a room to photograph, to make pictures, and to do the encoding work. And we couldn't. I thought we would have access to Museum Plus because but of course we didn't, because the internet connection wasn't working sufficiently, and there wasn't a room neither, so we had to do it at the outside. We brought everything with us, and then every day we mounted and demounted. So voilà, this was our where we encoded. This is Caroline, who left now. I mean, the project is finished. So, but these are the fishes from Brazzaville. The instruments were here in the back, and then they brought them. So they were restored there, dusted or cleaned a bit, and then we did all the information on it, and then they were photographed here around the corner. I'll show you. Voilà, this is where they were. This is the end of the corridor where they were restored. And yes, she's one of our restorers. She's one of the museum agents there. This is from the other side. These were.
So you really had a workflow going from the reserve
to the pictures. And the pictures were the last thing that was around the corner. So this is the encoding. This is the photo studio. in the sand, in the dust, there were so many insects biting us the whole time. And we had, because it was quite windy as well, we had to put put weight so that it didn't fly away. Yeah, that's the army. I don't know. I'm waiting for something. This is sort of the restorer. This is Jean-Paul Goudougou from Ouagadougou, who was there to help. And these are two people from another museum, the National Museum. He was a really good one. What's his name? Oilily. And very passionate, but you should have seen his museum. Caroline again. We'll just go through them quickly. And this is the restoration, Jean-Paul again. Voilà, and then we brought everything with us, the paper, and each morning we took out everything, the table and all of them.
How long did you work there?
2 weeks.
And for the so that's like the sort of physical restraints, but for the encoding, how did that go? Like, did
we
you
put everything in an Excel file because we had no access to the system, and then at home we cut and paste everything. But we did that with three persons. So there, these were Brazzaville count 200 instruments. So that's all right. No, 180, and Ouagadougou 200. So that's considerable.
But more in the on the level of like you
metadata.
Yes, like how did it?
Yeah, I talked with these people. Of course, how shall I write it down? And then somebody said, "Yeah, it's gong gong." No, it's gong gong. And then a with a hyphen on, and then with the do a and an o or whatever. They never agreed on the writing, because it's oral. It comes from oral traditions. But we found ways out of. They were our. They provided the right information. Follow the army, preparing lunch. Yeah, this was my hotel room. This was
so funny.
Voilà.
Always with shiny. They love shiny things. Voilà.
And a good sofa.
Yes. And a good sofa. No windows.
Lots of tiles.
Yeah.
This was the restaurant in the hotel. This was university.
So now this material exists on the same. I mean, if you show.
Is it on plus?
It's no. Well, in the what was the no the
Mimo?
The you Mimo, it exists on the same level.
Ah, yeah. Salut, Céline. À demain?
It's interesting that once it's photographed and sort of described, you can like the environment where these objects are is so different. It's almost shocking to see them like completely leveled.
Yeah, true.
No?
With a white background and everything is and also and people like the people in Paris who are harvesting our collection into the MIMO database. They said the instruments are so beautiful, and we didn't realize when we saw them, because they were so dusty and with all the insects always, and it was so hot. And but then actually if you see them, yeah, they are like they're different. True, maybe it's in they look nice, but they lose their context.
Well,
the physical context.
On the other hand, they come to they come into context with other instruments that are not there.
Yeah,
so.
Voilà, it's another context. Yeah,
yeah,
and comparison is very interesting. Juxtaposition is very interesting. If you see these instruments next to completely different sort of instruments, like the fiddles, for instance, you still see similarities between all the fiddles, of course, on the way of, because they are all bowed, but also on the, if you get into it a bit deeper, for instance, you see also social similarities. Fiddles are always played, or used to be played in here in the West as well, by low-ranked people. Fiddles were instruments for poor people who made their instrument themselves, and they played it to have a living, to earn a living. And the gamba, for instance, the gamba, you know, the viola da gamba, that's an amateur instrument. It's never been played by professionals. That's why it has frets on it, like the guitar. But that was not played to earn money with it. It was just a hobby. It was something very chic. And so the big difference. And the instruments which have been played by people to earn their money with, these are always low ranked. Because earning your life with making music is not very prestigious.
It depends on what instrument and in what context.
Has changed
a
bit now,
If you're on a concert piano
or
on a concert, yeah.
Yeah.
So another question is, the first conversation we had was with Serge, who's his collection.
It's America.
It's America.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to see how, for him, the process of digitizing and describing, he was for him an invitation to go back to all the objects. Like he was very clearly making a connection between the actual object and then as a way to then start to describe it.
Yeah.
How is that for you? Like,
well,
did you?
I have made the inventory in the reserves with the objects next to me, because I don't think. For me, it was otherwise I couldn't make an inventory if I didn't have it next to me. But of course, all the contextual information, like who, how it came into the museum, that was found in the archives. That was another phase, another etape.
Mm-hmm.
But. No, I did it in between the instruments, in between the, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to see, I had to see also only to take measures and to see the material and to give it the right place number.
And now, because in a way this is something that has been going on for a long time,
yes.
So the operation now to produce records that include a valuation, how is that for you? Like.
Include evaluation, do you
mean? Evaluation,
But the thing is, when we made the, I think everybody did like that, yeah, quite sure. When we made our inventory for the European project, we had, we used the archives, which means archives like the invoices and everything from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, 60s up till the 2010, and we put that information in here if available. So the only thing we had to do was Els from eCollections made an export. This is a bad example because it's a gift, so we didn't have any. But from about half of the objects, I had at least one amount, one price. Sometimes that price was too high, sometimes it was too low, but I'm sure that my gemiddelde, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is quite correct. So I can show you that too. We had to do that in a separate, I think it must be here somewhere. No. We had to do that in a separate Excel file because our collection management system can't yet integrate it. It's a different module which we didn't pay for. Not yet. So it had.
So you're valuing with in unpaid software.
Exactly. It's just collections. So what we did is, I asked Els to make exports of every collection. And for instance, you have Africa, Electris, Volks Instrument in Africa, Africa, what is it? Two different sources. Asia, Corde, etc. Some from Zaken, this is Oceania. And then, for instance, I'll take Africa. I think I did almost everything now. So
you're the first that shows it to us.
Ah, yeah. Ah, voilà. Congratulations. Ah, yeah.
No, you haven't seen this.
Okay, sichtbaar maken. So this is what comes from Museum Plus.
Yeah.
I asked Els. We need this field. This field. And voilà. This is. Original information from Museum Plus. So sometimes it's in euros, sometimes it was in Belgian francs, etc. So this was important source material. But, of course, 100 euros, that's easy in 2012. But, of course, everything is changing and with the index. So I asked to have Chris Vastenoot help me a lot with that. He actually made the Excel file. So what we needed was an indexation. For euros, and also if we had, for instance, here I had an amount of 2,000 Belgian francs for 14 objects. So what I did, I think you can see, for 2,000 deal to 14. You're laughing.
No. It's just that we had many stories of frustration with this valuation, and one of the frustration was a collection. Like the need to value singular objects. So yeah. Sophie was talking about her collection of nails.
Yeah, nails.
And she has like thousands of nails that as a collection have worth.
That's one lot. It's a lot.
It's a lot, and also it's because it's a reference collection. She described it as such. She says, like, as a collection, it's important that it exists, and but
it
a
has
nail
no value.
Has no value.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
what? How
yeah.
do I? And so you just literally do like you just separate, like you just
whatever we have, we
yeah.
use, and of course sometimes we have like we have this is an instrument is quite an. A complex object, which is always considered as separately. We don't have things like nails or that is. I mean,
you mean like
they're
usually individual
separate things. Yeah, that's why you can't compare a collection of 9,000 instruments with a collection of 9,000 nails or whatever. You know, it's not always a quantity which counts. It's a kind of object which is very important. I'm sure that you never can make a record. Like this of a nail.
It would be interesting to try.
Could be. I'm quite sure you never would.
You'd do it, no.
No.
And did you? And
so
did you dare to make the total of
yes,
your collection?
Yes, you can see it. It's a state property, so everybody can see it. But the nice thing is, I'll just continue. So if you have it here in Belgian francs, it is immediately translated into euros. And then when I put the year, it is indexed. This is the source. If I have more than one, if I would have more than one number, I would have included that as well. And like here, for instance, and then in the end, yeah, this is my own for all the things I do. And then in the end, you have an inventory.
Yeah.
But if you don't have anything at all, you can here give a nominal. But I didn't do that because I use my own estimation as a historical source. In 2016, I thought this instrument was worth that. That's why it's all here.
Yeah.
When there was no other information available.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that much work. And then if you go to the totals, okay, I see I have done all my numbers because there are two. And I have total value of 1.5 million. Voila!
And so how is your...
with the moyen of that for each instrument, and I think that's quite perfect because there are many
okay.
poor things, but there are also really
in general, an object is some
African collection or the mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Emile was talking about the problems. I'm trying to ask this question clearly. So I can see a lot of in your work that that the digital collection is very useful for you and also a source of pleasure and
yeah, in a way having control over all those things.
Yes, but also an ability to give depth and dimensions to an object.
Yeah.
So that's and I'm really it's really exciting to see that.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it's part of like what we're thinking about is how can systems deal with these versions, divergence.
I try to imagine what is interesting for you, but I'm not an artist, so but I think I can feel it a little bit. You're busy or occupied with digitization and what it can do with objects or. How the mass of information... I don't know. Actually, I don't know really.
Well, I mean, it's when we talk about... So there's two sides of this digital operation. So, and that's why I think it's good to look at this this total figure. Is you could say, on the one hand, it allows, for example, certain descriptions to appear that otherwise would not be visible. Multiples to exist, like... The digital is not is generous in the sense that something can have multiple names. Information can be layered. The same object can be described in many ways in different contexts. All that potential is there, and I think that's where I recognize your.
That's why it's so interesting.
Your interest. So that's one side. But there's another side. If we go to this figure and what's happening here, is also that it reduces. Objects to, for example, in this case, to their value. how do you have, like, when you were making, when you were doing this exercise, did you think about why this was needed and what this would do? Like, now we have the figure.
It is needed. It is very, as far as I know, it is very pragmatic. We have to know what we possess, and it's not only we; it's the Belgian state. We are all part of it's property. It's Belgian state property, and the Belgian state property wants to know how rich it is. It's so simple. And if they want to, I even heard that, for instance, when they want to, in the case of loans or in the case of the solvability of the Belgian state, it's good to know what their activa are worth. It's not only the buildings and so, but also their patrimony. And apparently it's quite a scandal that we never valued our patrimony.
Have you seen other, like, for example, with your Parisian colleagues?
Yeah,
do they have these figures?
They refuse to do it.
Do you know why?
Because they are lazy. No, but it's a lot of work, but also because they say it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous in a way to put a value, and they are right. It is impossible to put the right value on it because it can change every day. And what it's worth what somebody wants to pay for it. But if somebody is crazy enough to pay whatever amount, then it is that worth it. So it is very difficult to put a price on it. It is, in a way, it's impossible. But we have to, so we do it in a pragmatic way. We use what we have. But of course, if you have to do this work, we had to do it in 1 year, which is quite okay, I think. But if you have never registered somewhere all the information from your inventories and your invoices, well, then it's impossible. I realize. And then you have to guess, give an estimation, and people feel uneasy about it, of course. And if you have many information on existing objects, you can compare. And so I compare it. If I have all my sons, and I think I put them at 500 euros, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems also that the differences in value in the objects that you care for are not as extreme as in some of the other collections we saw.
I have instruments. No, but not as in other instruments. I think my most expensive instrument is about 10,000, and my cheapest is 10.
Yeah, so that's a range that is sort of
manageable. But I can, for instance, the person who's responsible for the keyboards, she has harpsichords from the 16th, 17th century. Yeah, they are priceless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a field,
no.
No. But Emil used when we asked him more or less the same question, he said there's a shift from heritage as legacy to heritage as instrument. I mean, he used the word instrument as in instrumentalisatie.
Yeah, yeah. An instrument to do what?
To
political instrument or something.
Political or
could be a financial.
Yeah.
It could be. It's a sort of, as far as I feel and understood, it is like a sort of a financial guarantee somewhere. Also, once I heard, but that was the accountant, and the accountant is the accountant. But he said, "What's the use of paying a curator for a collection when that collection has no value? Because I don't have any value in my books. I don't have."
Yeah.
So we can dismiss this person. This is, of course, extreme. But
yes,
you can
because
use it as an instrument.
Yeah. No, but I mean, it's like once you, to me, it's quite interesting to see on the same screen this sort of simplification of your collection into this figure.
Yeah,
or a part
it is
of
simplific.
The
yeah, of course. It is.
And the precision and the. The many, many stories that are in each of these sheets.
If I would count my hours, which I work, this is an idea, which if I would include all the hours I work on each object, yeah, then it would be a much higher price.
Yeah. Which is
I didn't think about it.
Okay.
Maybe we are too modest. We are too modest, yeah. But of course, yeah. This is not this is not put online, of course. It's we don't give any values in Carmentis. We are not allowed to do that. I don't know why. No, we are not allowed. Also because it's not because people sometimes ask us to value, to put a financial, to put a price on an instrument. We can't.
No, and also I understand that you, as a federal institution, you can't be part of...
No, of the market.
No. No, that's very clear. But in a way...
But it is there.
Yeah.
There is something there. There mm-hmm. is something there.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is... It is this is a historically based financial valorization, but if that is correct...
Yeah. Yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
In the 60s, we paid much too much for our objects because they were bought even the Sablon, the reputed Sablon, where they also sold things from the archaeological sites and stolen there, and still do sometimes. I heard De La Taille is really notorious for that. He's still living, I think. He bought many instruments from at extremely high prices.
Wow.
And then at other times we paid nothing for very nice, important instruments. I don't know, things from the Van Jettik found, because, I don't know, they died and they want to get rid of it. And
thought to
yeah.
give it to a good place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dag Pascal.
Hello.
She's the one responsible for the keyboards.
Ah.
With the expensive records. I was talking about... They are
priceless, I perhaps agree.
Hello.
Pascal. Hi. I don't know your names, actually.
Excuse me.
Femke,
no.
Michael.
Femke and Michael, hi.
Yeah.
from which institution?
There's Constant, which is a small organization here in Brussels,
okay.
Arden Media. Yeah.
We're preparing a work session with people working on digital archives and digital
okay.
tools. In the
St.
Gothenburg and
Jubelpark
Museum
okay.
in December. So, and for this, we have been talking to
curators,
some of your colleagues.
Quite a specialist.
Exactly.
Obsessed.
Can I one minute? Je ne sais plus comment mettre les deux écrans comme ça. Excuse-moi.
Ah,
mais
il faut aller dans
configuration.
Oui. Et moi aussi, je dois toujours un peu chercher. Un screen, wacht hoor, waar is dat nu? Mais chez toi, c'est en France.
Oui, mais ça, je retrouvais, mais j'arrive
yeah.
plus à retrouver. Et en fait, une
screen.
Fois que tu déconnectes ton
oh,
truc,
yeah, yeah,
ben
yeah,
ça se remet.
Yeah,
moi, ça s'enlève.
Oh, voilà.
Yes.
Allez, va résonner, va résonner.
Bon, c'est pas grave, je vais te...
Bildschirm.
Oui, mais regarde Bildschirm, mais puis
tu
vas là-dedans. Ah, ok.
Je crois que c'est ici.
Ok, alors je cherche
le truc. Voilà, ici.
Ok,
et ça c'est un, et ça c'est deux. Et tu peux changer, comme... Mais il faut chipoter un peu,
je sais. Ok, merci beaucoup.
Vu que je t'envoie cette... Je vais faire un print screen, et alors tu peux faire la même chose.
Ah
tu comprends?
Ouais, bonne idée.
Je t'envoie.
Voilà.
Bah, si ça va marcher, hein. Ah, yeah, it's too big.
Non, mais c'est pas grave, je vais m'en
okay.
tirer.
Voilà, je vais. Il y a de Soot van der Wallen. C'est là, hein.
Ok.
Il faut le tirer.
D'accord.
Toch verzenden, voilà.
Het was de tentoonstelling in Niels.
Ja, Sam Balotti. Ja. Ah ja. Hij heeft hier nu een schone.
Ja, speel.
Hij heeft die in Niels.
Ja, ja, in Niels.
Ja, dat is geweldig.
Ja, I like
maar waar was dat eigenlijk? Dat is Congo.
Ik denk dat Kinshasa is.
Yeah.
As far as
but
I remember, it's
Kinshasa.
Yeah.
Kinshasa.
Yeah, he is from Kinshasa.
Mm.
And it's something typical. We have things like that in Brazzaville as well.
Mm.
Well,
yeah.
The museum already had some signs of that, no?
Sorry?
The
yeah,
museum
yeah, yeah,
already
yeah,
had
yeah,
some signs
yeah,
of
exactly.
That.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I had one question, which is just because, of course, the museum here is really, for me, super known or stands out as being the fact that, of course, it has all these recordings of the, you know, the sounds that the instruments make, but
yeah,
also
yeah.
looking at your pictures as well, you could think of, yeah, of course, how they're played. And so is there... How does that work? And because I know clearly it's much more about the objects and it's about documenting the objects and how their history. But is there links to these kinds of to the use of them or?
Good question. I'm a scientist, so I'm not very... Yeah, well, I am concerned, of course, with what is shown in the exhibition halls. But I know that we are now in the process of rearranging one of the floors, and we use this a lot. Mm. We use this a lot to see when it was built and everything, and also for measurement, for measures, so it's very handy. But and we can link musical examples to it, we can link documentation, as you saw it. So it's kind of a source. But... So your question
but it's, well,
is
for instance, just like the sound, the fact that there's all these recordings, musical performance.
Yes.
Are those linked or
no? Because they are not from the instruments specifically. Not always. It's only a minority. Our instruments. Yeah, that's another issue.
Mm.
We have the policy not to play on our instruments. We don't restore instruments. We keep them as they come in. In the state in which they come in, and if they come in broken, we leave them broken and we put them like that, like the bagpipe you saw, it has ended like that, so we keep it like that. But we do restorations for instance, if we want to show a harp but the chords have disappeared, then we put chords on it, because otherwise people don't recognize it as a harp. The identity of the instrument, of the object, has to be clear. We don't play the instruments because that's our policy. There is not the good solution. If you play on them, you use them, they deteriorate and they won't be kept for the later generations. If you don't play on them, you keep them for the later generations, but It's a dead object, and that the people now will never know how it sounds. So, well, I won't know.
But
it's a dilemma which can never be solved. And that's why we try to. It's like a paradox. An instrument is made to play on, not to look at. And here you can only look at and not touch it anymore. And so to try to overcome this paradox, we have the audio guides in which you hear the music sometimes of the instruments in the display, but seldom.
No, but I can say, I mean, from the point of view of the experience, it's a good balance. I mean, it gives you an impression of what this kind of instrument is, you know.
Yeah.
This kind of single string instruments, for instance, I'd never heard.
It's nice.
Yeah, then you get, because I wouldn't have imagined what it sounds like.
Uh-huh.
It's quite strange, actually.
Yeah.
It's
Okay. And what we also do is, but that is quite straightforward, is joining iconography to the instrument so that you can see how they are played, how they are lying in the arms of the voila, like this. These are pictures I received from the Africa Museum. Yeah, they are doubles from the Africa Museum, and I put them just in a frame because more than 10 years ago I did a little exhibition on the Sanzas, actually, on the Lamellophones.
But in a way, then that kind type of information should be linked then to the thesaurus more than the individual object.
Yes,
it's more
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Because on that level,
it's not that specific object. It's the general.
The family.
Yeah. Family. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not the case yet.
No.
But as I said,
it's
not forever.
It's
not a static thing, and it may not and it shouldn't be.
No, but that would be interesting if you think about the thesaurus of as a way to somehow index the instrument, that if the sounds could somehow start.
We did a project on prototypes of fiddles. Again, fiddles. I have something with fiddles as well. And we tried to, that was also with Caroline, we tried to determine prototypes by put them on an XS.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, how could I? You have. We could sort of see the similarity between instruments. But that's what I didn't show. Every instrument in the project, I think the Rutger was included as well, has been given tags. For instance, number of fingered strings 2, the neck is short, back placement lateral, the stem screw, the playing position vertical, the project, the sound shape, etc. And then while we bring these, by bringing all these elements together and doing searches on it, but Museum Plus is a bit, it's not the ideal thing, but you can find clusters of similar instruments, and within those clusters we try to find the prototype also on the level of the sound. And then we had a sort of a placement, an order of instruments. We could see which instruments were similar to others, and then we, but this is a bit daring and it hasn't been researched into the really depth, but we could link it to, we will be able to link it to migrations, which is interesting.
Wow. Do you have any
which instrument influenced which instrument?
Is there any kind of image of that? This kind of
in the OMI
axis.
It is Caroline who was.
And so, if you talk about searches, it's like literally you take the exports and you.
No, really, in this, for instance, in this, and then we change the fields, and we say, for instance, I have to look at. It's a bit complicated, it's a bit a burden. For instance, we choose contenu on the level of playing position. I'll try to find it. So I say here, contenu, Romani contenus. In the classification, for instance, what was I saying? Playing position, has it been? Maybe it has never been searched. It would surprise me. I'm maybe not on this computer. Or pack placement, for instance. And I want all the
vertical or lateral
pack placements.
Yeah.
Voilà. Simple things like that. Or combinations, lateral with things we think which or which belong together. Which after a time you think, okay, lateral pack placement always comes with the short neck. I just say anything.
Mm-hmm. Pattern searching in
to
make some more.
Maybe I don't know if I have the final reports, because it was on the computer of misclassifications.
Wait, what's this graph with misclassifications? Yeah.
Voilà, these are all the easy. These are all the root gas, for instance. These are all, and so you see. But this is just the beginning. I don't know if this is the sound or this is a specific characteristic. But here are also, these are the Congolese, the African ones, and I see here are more. This is African again, but Maghreb. This is more like. It has to be.
It's your first impression.
It's like the field web. This is Chinese. I think the Asians are here, so I don't know actually what this all can mean yet.
And how do you do this? Is this something you produce yourself?
This was at the University of Bergen. The informatics department, the ICT department of Bergen. We didn't make that. We gave the information. We can't do that.
And so they came back with these sort of interpretations, and you were like...
Yeah, we didn't understand, and then they explained, and then I don't know where is the final...
Cluster metric, that's the...
Yeah, I mean, it's not... We did not do it. Voilà, I think his name is here. It's Xavier Sider. This one helped as well. Yeah. Voilà! All kind of tableaus of the Banhu, and the Ndingidi is from Burkina, and the Erwu is from China, and the Haigum is from Indonesia, and Imzat is from the Tuaregs, etc. The Izizi from Tanzania, but the Izizi is from Central Africa as well. And then, I don't know. This is sound characteristics. Comanche. But there must be a report. Um, They only things for the craft, the fiddle prototypes. Yeah, this is the material we gave to them. No, this is the prototype.
So prototype is this the collection of classifications such as lateral placement of.
The prototypes were those instruments with the most clear characteristics, which were to be distinguished from the similar object.
Yeah, so it's sort of reference.
Yes, reference of, yeah.
And to see if from the database you could find these.
Yeah, and you have the same instrument, but for instance with three chords instead of the prototype who has two. So it is like an exception on one level. And what does it say? Why is it? And does it say something about, mostly about migration though? What influenced what? Yeah. But this is a project which is the field work is finished, but the interpretation, well, the actual. I don't know how far she got with.
So the prototype. So then, so you have a data prototype in a way, you know, like this is a typical fiddle.
Yeah.
This is the most fiddle.
Yeah.
And then you. Yeah. Give them the data for this fiddle.
Yes, and then he compares with them, and then he puts these instruments in comparison. He gives it, he positions it to, in relation to the prototype. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a project which we got in partnership with the University of Mons. We would never be able to do that on our own, of course.
No, it's interesting. I mean, you can see that the way the database is growing, that these kind of things start to become possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's another
yes.
kind of coming from the digitization.
Yes.
It becomes shareable and
yeah,
suddenly
of course.
People start to take those data as input to something else. But it's nice that it comes back then, that it's done in partnership, so that, that indeed you can look at it and...
Yeah, and make interpretations or try to make interpretations.
Yeah, or warn if something maybe has gone. I mean, I can imagine it might go a direction that you could be really interesting to go.
Unexpected,
yeah. Or it could lead to kind of misinterpretations too, though.
Oh yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I was looking in at your file names. There was one file with misclassifications.
Yeah. Okay. They are not right. Well, it has to be compared with the other one. I don't know exactly
wrong. Something went wrong.
Something went wrong.
Maybe it's just on the level of. I don't know. I don't know. The names aren't given.
Okay, no,
that's I don't know. But you see the erhu, which is a Chinese instrument with two strings which are not put one next to one another, but one above the other, and very specific with specific characteristics, but you see them appearing on different places anyway, which means that there are many exceptions on the towards that in relation to the prototype.
Yeah. No.
This is
Yeah. I mean, we're.